Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week I explore different topics in a spiritual unfolding that's happening across the country and around the world, and it's really about opening up people to new realities. Tonight I have a whole potpourri of different guests and topics, and my first guest is Sam Gadel, and he is going to be speaking about new forms of relationship, a greater awareness of sexuality, and I think just a different way of meeting each other. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Well, describe your work, Sam.
Well, I'm a sensuality coach, and I have a company called The Sensual Life. My partner and I host courses and events that are around awareness and experiences, and allowing ourselves to step into new paradigms, new ventures, new ways of being, and with just the only goal of it to have new experiences in our bodies, and new sensations in our bodies, and to see who I am there at that moment, and what am I about when I step into something new.
Well, you know what I find the problem, let's say, with relationships is that it gets to be routine. You know, so, you know, you have a partner for a while, and it's like, I do this, you do this, and it's like, how do you get out of that pattern?
I don't think you can get out of the pattern, but what I think you can do is be conscious, is through the beginning of the relationship, is be conscious about what kind of relationship you want along the way. I think patterns start when people fall asleep in relationships.
Patterns start, so when they talk about falling asleep.
So falling asleep is when we stop engaging with the other person as if they're brand new and you've never met them before. When we start assuming that we know everything about them and there's really nothing left to learn.
Right, right. So, but isn't part of that relationship, you know, assuming something about someone because you're developing, you're going deeper with them, and it's like to meet a new person every day. Why not just go out and meet a new person every day?
You can totally do that. There are people who do that. Mm-hmm. And then there are ways that you can actually meet a new person every day with the same person, who the person who's right in front of you, who you wake up with every day.
Right. But it's human habit to just make assumptions and say, oh, I mean, I guess, how do we break out of the habit of creating habits?
Well, you know, I was just thinking the other day about love and eroticism. And mm-hmm. when I say eroticism, I mean the aliveness that we have in our bodies. That sexual feeling, that high vibration mm-hmm. that sometimes disappears when we fall into habits. And love is something that we want to have based on some past experiences or maybe that we didn't have or our idea of love. But it kind of fits only in the context of if I know you well enough, then we can love each other, and then you know me well enough, and then I trust you, and then we love each other in that place.
Of course, you can fall in love immediately, but maybe that's not love either, you know.
Yeah, but then the love can only exist in a small place of I trust you, you trust me, we know each other, we know each other really well,
right.
You know how I like, I know what you like. But then that's kind of what I think is static love.
Right.
And the bigger love, or maybe love it's a different word when we are having each experience like it's brand new. Like, I don't know that person in front of me. I think I do. But for me to let go of the kind of love that I want and see what they want and let go of my heavy needs for love and comfort and security.
Let go of what you want from the relationship. Well, we all want love, right? I mean, we want love, and we also want to give love.
I think you're right. I think we do want love, but I think love on a lot of levels is very selfish.
Yeah, very selfish.
And to have a love where I'm going to get that my life depends on the person across from me,
and
that aliveness, and that I need their energy, means I can't make any assumptions about them. The moment I make any assumptions or I do anything from a place of conditioning or what I think they'll say or do, is immediately I stop seeing them. Once I stop seeing them, then they just exist as a part of me.
Right. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. It's really exciting to keep the relationship fresh. Like, every day you're waking up with a new person and a new possibility. But are there, like, techniques for doing this? I mean,
I think the techniques are to out of the patterns of what we usually think of as sensuality. So we teach a practice that's called orgasmic meditation. And it's about being really intimate and vulnerable and having a connection, but it's not from the place of our usual source, the way that we usually sex or the way we usually are intimate.
Mm-hmm.
It's from a place of me putting my full attention on the other person's orgasm and choosing to feel that person's orgasm from a brand new space each time.
Mm.
Without any judgment of what was yesterday's orgasm or what will tomorrow's orgasm will be, and just feel that.
This is the male feeling the female orgasm?
It's both. There's a female part of this of oming, and there's a male practice
of orgasmic meditation.
Of orgasmic meditation. Mm. And both partners, if we're talking about a man-woman dynamic, people can connect to each other's most sexual, intimate place of desire, of fear, of sensation.
But let me ask you sort of an old-fashioned question or kind of a... Isn't the purpose... Well, purpose, I don't know what that means. But the goal of sex is to have that orgasm together. So there you are, the parts connect, and you're rubbing up against each other. And the culmination is to have that orgasm with each other. I mean, that's like the ideal, right?
Yeah, that definitely is great. There's nothing wrong with that.
Thank you.
I won't take that away from you.
Well, you can have it. Okay, I want it.
Okay, you can have it.
Okay.
But there's the and.
Yeah.
I think it's the and. It's those places that we're so fearful of touching. We're just fearful of trying something else. We're human beings, we just love our conditioning. We love our...
Hi.
I'm on the radio here. Go away, I'm interviewing Sam. But go ahead, sorry, Sam.
We just love our ways of being. And what I found is, as a man, to take on this practice has totally shifted my relating to my own sexuality. So when I am oming with a woman, I've shifted my whole approach to my sex, where I'm not feeling like I have to get mine or I have to get off, but it's really about feeling more. Like, I want to feel more. I've become like a sensation junkie, where I just want to keep feeling and expanding all the different range of sensations that I can take in.
Right, but I'm talking about you're giving her pleasure, right?
I'm not giving her anything.
You're not giving her any? Aren't you giving her pleasure?
No. When I'm stroking a woman's genitals, her clitoris, I'm actually stroking it for a way it feels good for my body.
But you must be concerned with her a little bit.
No. The only thing, I'm not concerned with her because we both made the agreement to lie down, to be in a position,
right,
and to feel. So I'm agreeing to feel everything that she's feeling. So I'm agreeing to feel her as she's opening as well, and to feel myself. So I'm not leaving myself out, and I'm not leaving her out. We're going in together.
Right. You go, okay. I mean, I have talked to other people about this orgasmic meditation. But I do want people to understand. So you're providing a sensation for your partner.
No,
you're not.
I'm not. I'm agreeing to be in sensation with my partner.
You're agreeing you're getting a sensation, she's getting a sensation.
Right, I'm agreeing to be in a relationship where we create a sensation together.
But you just happen to be touching her genitals.
Because that is the place where I want to explore, where we've chosen to, explore our sexuality.
But the genitals happen to be a very sensational place.
They do, which is why we I've actually, in this practice, it's a called a slow practice, because I'm stroking with my index finger.
Right.
And in a way, in that way, I'm actually just feeling her.
Right.
As opposed to doing anything. I can see her clitoris. I can see her genitals.
Okay.
And I can
her clitoral.
Her clitoris.
Yeah.
And I can stroke her.
Yeah.
But I'm not doing anything to her. I'm not trying to fuck her deeper or to get mine or anything. I'm just feeling.
But you're feeling. I'm just trying to get clear.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
You're feeling sensation.
Yeah.
So. And you don't want more sensation than you already have, is that, because if you did, then you'd want to have sex.
Well, no, it's not like I don't want it. It actually comes from a place of I'm feeling everything fully. So I'm not grasping for more. It's in that place when we're grasping. What I've learned is when I grasp for more, I actually can't fully feel what I have if I'm grasping for the more. And if I can slow down and do this practice, and I can feel everything. I can feel more than enough because I allow myself to feel what is first.
I get what you're saying, but if you're not grasping for feeling more, why do we do the practice? And she's not grasping for more, right? And why do we have to do a practice at all? Why can't we just sit and be with each other like this and feel? You know what I'm asking?
You totally can. And yep. And that's totally legitimate.
Yes.
And then there is a place where the genitals hold a lot of energy.
Right.
There is our creative source. It's our life force. And it's also the place where we push down a lot of our desires in our genitals.
Right.
And it's also a place of taboo. There's a place of women sometimes don't want men to see the genitals. Men don't want a woman to stroke their cock just for their pleasure. You know, it's a lot of hang-ups for me to allow a woman to say, okay, you stroke my cock for your pleasure when it's not about me getting anything.
Right.
It requires a lot of surrender on my part.
Okay. No. I like that. Wait, I also have another interview coming up. Jade, are we doing that other interview? I will, yeah, tell the other, but I was, but, okay, getting back to what Sam was saying here, and, no, I want to do the other interview in about, 10 minutes. I'm talking to Sam Goodell, and he has a service, what you call a counseling?
No, I'm a sensuality coach and teacher, and my company's called The Sensual Life.
And you work with your partner.
I work with my partner, and we work with couples and individuals, and men and women of all genders, of all types, of relationships and how to have the deeper in relationships that we want to have, whatever it might be.
So what, do you find that some couples have stopped enjoying themselves because of what we were talking about?
I think they are too scared to go past the point of comfort, past what they know. So they're actually scared to go into the unknown and be in a sensual place or an erotic place that they may not know even themselves or the other person. And so we've, as human beings, we've just decided to stay in a smaller place than we're
So they're start. Scared to go further, and then the relationship starts to sag.
Right.
And so in your work with them, how do you get them to go further?
Well, we find out, first of all, where the stuckness is.
Right.
And then we give them options of what they've wanted to explore, the desires that they've had deep down inside themselves that they don't even acknowledge to themselves, let alone acknowledge to the other partner. Like, we were working...
You get them... Wait, slow up, because
sorry.
I want to... No, I just want to... Yeah. You process them in a way, and you get them to acknowledge desires that they might not even know they have.
They even haven't acknowledged, and they certainly haven't acknowledged, they haven't even told their partners. So I was working with a couple, and all of a sudden, we're working with a couple, and we're having this woman talk about her desires, and all of a sudden she says, I want you to treat me like a dog. And
okay.
Okay, but the guy was so shocked he started sweating, and really what she wanted is like the love and the attention of a way a man.
Oh, she didn't want like some weird sexual.
Well, maybe she did, but but the thing is, you know, he didn't know that, and he all of a sudden got really turned on. She got turned on just by saying it.
Uh-huh.
But it was really what she wanted is like that, that way an owner takes really good care of a dog and feeds a dog and walks the dog. She wants to be loved that way. She wants to be the puppy or the whatever, you know, his puppy. But that desire was so deep inside her.
Yeah.
And he got so excited. And, yeah. And then we said, okay, well, there's ways you can explore that consciously.
Yeah.
And we helped them explore that in role playing.
How'd you get her to acknowledge that part and say
well,
that?
Well, there's just a format, a dialogue, where there's the partner asks the other partner, tell me your desires. And the partner who is sharing just speaks their desire as it comes up. And desires are kind of funny. It's kind of like a plate in a cafeteria. You take one, another one pops up. But you have to at least speak the one that's on top to have the other one rise up. And so as it's a practice, and as soon as you speak it and get it out of your mouth, the next one can come up. And then the partner who's being told the desire just says, thank you.
I see. So, couple, you don't need a counselor to do this with. A couple could sit with each other and say, tell me your desire.
And the idea is that the person who's sharing the desire just gets to share fully. And the partner who is listening just says, thank you. So nothing has to be done with the desire.
Unless
you want to do something, and then the person who shared it can ask for more.
Like,
but sometimes releasing that, go to sleep at night, don't say anything, or the person next to us in bed is going to think I'm weird if I... love inside, and we don't give that to ourselves, and then we don't give that to our partner.
Right, and we don't give it to ourselves. We're not in touch with our own desire.
No.
So that's a great practice. Thank you for sharing that little piece, because I think people can just take that home and feel with their partner, okay, I'm going to share this desire that maybe I haven't shared. But if I share a desire, I mean, you're saying not necessarily get a fulfillment, but I would think I want a fulfillment. Desire.
Well, you can talk about that later,
right.
But it starts with one person wanting to know the other person's desires. So if we were in partnership, Alan, I would say, tell me your desire. And you would say...
Don't treat me like a dog.
And I would just say, thank you.
I see... Okay,
then I would say again, tell me your desire.
Oh, you keep saying it.
And you keep saying it, so it's a loop. It's a communication cycle, and it's a loop. Mm-hmm. And it keeps going, so the person just has it's like a free association.
So a couple would do that with each other?
Right.
Or since you work with Monica, your partner,
Right. Would
it might be easier for the woman to say it to the woman or the man to say it to the man?
We can do that, but really we want to get the couples... energy stirring up again.
I see.
We're in coaching with a couple, and we'll say, okay, we're going to do this practice, and we'll explain it to them. And we might spend a half hour just doing this, or an hour just doing this, because it's so locked inside of ourselves that we can't have what we want.
We can't have. That's our conditioning.
I have to live in my pain.
Uh-huh.
I have to. The world is going to say no to me. I have to work harder. I can't have my pleasure. And I can't have what I want.
Okay. What about, like, physical, or, like, sex or intercourse with a partner? Do you ever do surrogate work with couples?
I'm not a surrogate. Actually, I want to get trained as that.
You do.
So we can work with couples.
Is there a training?
Is a training out in Los Angeles.
Really? What company trains people?
I forget the name, but it's part of a sex surrogacy.
Really? Surrogacy?
Yeah, and I want to be trained because I do work with women in opening up their sex if they don't have a partner.
Opening up their genitals to experience more pleasure.
So there's a way that we have to wait to have our pleasure until I have the right partner. Right. And what my coaching with individuals,
yeah,
I'm encouraging them to find partners just to have experiences with.
Right.
That they can have what's called a research partner. Right. As somebody you just are taking in these new experiences,
right,
and you're choosing to say yes to each other's pleasure and yes to talking about it afterward and yes to staying in connection as it's going on.
Uh-huh.
And so I encourage the people, the single that I work with, is who can you find so that your pleasure is not only locked into the idea of a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, partner, like that.
Conditioned into our society,
right,
that we can only get pleasure from one person.
From partner, right.
And you're saying it doesn't have to be that.
I'm saying, no, it doesn't have to be that way. That actually, my taking care of my pleasure is being very responsible.
But you know, pleasure comes this emotional attachment,
yes,
people have, and if you're saying that, you're saying cut off your emotional attachment is what I'm
saying. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying feel it,
yeah,
and notice it. Well,
mm-hmm,
if an emotional attachment comes up,
mm-hmm,
great. Let's go into that emotional attachment. Let's not shy away from anything. Let's really explore what comes up when you're having in this incredible intimacy. What's the emotion? And then together explore what the emotion is. What happens is we collapse into labels and roles. We collapse into boyfriend, girlfriend, husband and wife, partner,
right,
blah, blah. And their lives, like,
that's my wife, that's my partner,
right,
and that's it.
And we cease to grow anything bigger than that role.
And to keep that alive, you're saying disconnect from the label.
Right.
And
right. I'm saying even in that, you can be in a monogamous relationship,
yeah,
but notice the patterns that you've fallen into. Notice the conditioning of your relationship and where there's what I call a collapse. Where one person, you don't even see where the person ends and another person begins.
Right.
You just become morphed into this one being.
And to change that,
right,
are these refreshing exercises.
Right.
Well, tell people how to get in touch with you and what's coming up and, you know, all your information.
Yeah. So our website is called thesensuallife.com. My email address is sam@thesensuallife.com. We have an erotic open mic that we're doing on Saturday, May 30th at Tangine Dining Gallery at 9 p.m. We are also hosting a course in Washington, D.C. on June 13th and 14th in the practice of orgasmic meditation. And on June 8th, we'll be holding an evening discussion on our latest project called Sensual Biography, which is discussion groups that we'll also be holding. Once again, the website is thesensuallife.com.
Okay.
And my email address is sam@thesensuallife.com.
Okay, this is Alan Steinberg. I've been talking to Sam Gale. Actually, we have another 10 minutes before my next guest arrives.
Sure.
So, because we started to go deeper into this process, you started to tell me things that were a revelation for me. As far as, like, how to connect deeper with a partner just by sharing the immediacy of what's up in the relationship and not going automatic.
Right.
Not going into a... So do you do this in your relationship?
Yeah, we do, and it's hard.
Yeah.
You know,
talk about how hard it is, because
it's really
hard for you, who's a practicing person in this. What's hard?
What's hard is the... always being honest and straight.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little things that we stop sharing, the little resentments, the little bits and pieces that we don't want to say if the other person feels did something.
I am back here with Sam Goodell, and I liked what you were saying about how it is even hard for you to communicate when you know you might hurt your partner because by the people or because you...
Whatever the truth might be for me at the moment.
Like you got attracted to somebody else. Would that,
that might do it, or also that I'm angry with her.
Or she said something, or I
said something hurtful to her, but then I don't want to clean it up, so it's just left unsaid.
And that eventually leads to divorce.
Which we both experienced with other people, and we don't want to do that again. And the harder work is to always be honest. Is the moments where you feel, I can't be bothered. I don't want to be bothered right now. It's going to take too much. It's going to cause a fight. But to really, you know, own your feelings and say, hey, you know what? I just want to tell you how this felt for me.
Right.
And not project it onto that other person.
I felt really bad when you said that in front of everybody. And
exactly.
It's like, so you say that. You say what's up for you.
Right.
And... Well, she said, I didn't mean, or I said, what are you talking about? Or, I mean, that's, how do you avoid the fight?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really good question, because that one we're practicing. And I think the way to avoid the fight is that don't take the person's reaction on as who they are. That reaction is not really who they are. That reaction is the person being scared, is the person feeling bad or awkward or not knowing how to communicate at a moment or feeling defensive.
Yeah.
And to not...
Well, another way that they talk about in nonviolent communication is saying, this is how I felt.
Right.
Can't argue with how you feel.
Right.
Because that's your feeling. So... if you say, you know, when you said that, I felt this. It wasn't like you were making me feel this. This was my reaction to the situation. And most people are pretty loving. They'll say, well.
And that you are, even when that don't, when you're saying how you feel, if you can do it from a place of. Letting them know only, oh, you hurt me here, but trusting that person to, hey, you know, I just want to tell you. Whatever, or that happened, it hurt. And I just want to let you know that because I want to let you know where I am. It's really important for me to let you know, so you know what's going on for me.
Because that actually can get in the way of the sensual pleasure, right? I mean,
that's
because the two are connected, the emotional connection, the sensual connection. But getting back to the sensual connection, what if someone's totally shut down? Like, stop feeling their body, disconnected from any sensation. How do you work with someone like that?
Well, how do I work with them one-on-one, or how would you do it in a relationship?
No, how would you work with, one-on-one?
Well, when I do work with somebody, they've come to me. So there's just something more that they want, and I help them uncover the more.
Mm.
You know, when working with individuals, well, they have a certain way to come back. I said, but you have to have a minimum of 3 pages.
Uh-huh.
Because I want to feel their passion inside them. That
get to that before they get to the sensual but physical thing?
Yeah. It all starts there, and for people to learn how to speak.
Yes. So, desires. then they start the ball rolling.
They start that process of opening, and then once you can really tell a lot when a person speaks a desire, and if they feel shame after they've expressed that desire, you're like, oh, what's up with that? You want something, but then there's a shame, or they feel they can't have it, or they're not good enough, or whatever. On it, but they don't even know how to go about it. They'll just put it aside.
They'll ignore their own.
Exactly.
And that's what I really like about your work. You're making people feel their humanness. We're human. We're here to feel sensation.
Right.
And to just feel.
Exactly.
That is, and this conscious awareness of our feelings is what makes us human.
Yeah. It's a wild ride if you choose to want to feel everything in your life. It's an incredible, incredible experience to live life that way.
I mean, it almost sounds spiritual.
It is spiritual. It is spiritual because I'm willing to connect to everyone around me. And feel, if I'm willing to feel everything that I'm feeling, then I will, and
talking to you because I can see you've really thought about this and you've really done your own work to bring more of who you are forward. And I just encourage you now because, I never knew you had this wisdom inside you except when we were on the panel together. But you have a lot to say. No, it's bigger than you. It's bigger than the ego. So it's like I totally encourage you to, like, start to give courses and sensation and feeling and connection. So, wow, so that makes even more sense. It was your personal journey.
Yeah.
Had this, like, you didn't have any sense. You said, what was the big moment breakthrough for you?
I was living in a community. And I was...
Thank you, Sam, for sharing. We'll do more.
Yeah.
I was talking to Sam Goodell, and he'll be. I'll put people in touch with him if they want to email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. My next guest, switching gears totally, is talking to David Ingram, who's a rabbi in New York. And David, are you there? David, hello, David. David. Hi, David? David? sexuality panel at the Live Yoga Raw Food Expo this Friday at the New Yorker Hotel. And I'll do another show with Sam. I just hopefully have on the line David from the Ramu Synagogue. David, are you there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hi. Do you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, we don't have that much time, and I hope to do like a whole show with you some week. But, you know, you talk about Judaism in a new way, and we were just, I was just my last guest talking about sensuality, sexuality, communication. Is there any way to connect that to this idea of Judaism that you have?
I mean, without a doubt, they're all intertwined. I mean, Judaism of the 21st century, of course, has to make room for and appropriate sacred sensuality and sacred sexuality as a part of its core principles, and it hasn't yet been done. And it goes hand in hand with an inclusive attitude towards spirit. You know, spirit generally, you know, there are many schools of spirit, but generally the more inclusive you are of where to locate spirit, the more likely you are to include within your worldview sensuality and sexuality as a part of the domain of spirit. You know, old paradigms tend to bifurcate and create splits between mind and body, between holy land and non-holy land, and between women and man, and so on and so forth. And in a more inclusive, more vibrant, dynamic Judaism, the body is the temple of God no less so than is the synagogue or, you know, or the mosque, right? I mean, it has to be.
Yeah, I think the whole Star of David, the Hebrew star is the intersection of the male and female. I think right from there, that's my.
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, in the Kabbalah, you know, the Star of David is the principle of the ascending and the descending current of sensuality and sexuality, both the one of resurrection and incarnation, if you will, in Christianity. And in Judaism, it's Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh and Elohim, the two names of God that are principally used in the Bible, one representing the ascending current of energy, and the other, the descending feminine imminence, energy, and they have their embrace and fullest expression in sexual union, where male energies and female energies are dancing together, and that is the greatest mitzvah, the greatest divine commandment.
I get that, and I think it is time that Judaism rewrites its program, as you were saying today in the talk that you gave. It's to bring it from, you know, 1.0 to 2.0 and really make it a sensation of the modern age. Because, you know, when I went to Hebrew school, it was just it was boring, and the prayer books had no relevance to where I was and the modern experience. And how do you hope to make, you know, your interpretation of Judaism a part of the modern experience?
Well, it's not, Alan, it's a good point. I mean, how do you hope and how do you build that kind of, movement or that kind of relevant Judaism is by doing it. You can't, you know, can't think about it. We have to get our hands dirty, and we need to look at the prayer book and begin to take the prayers that are there that are relevant and that are time-honored and have a holy vibration, and we need to incorporate those into a more user-friendly and more, I think, more English. There are a lot of things to do that can make a service more profound and more relevant. And
the problem that we've had is that, first of all, we have to reinterpret Judaism to begin with, because what we know of Judaism in America, it's a sort of holdover from the Middle Ages of Europe that has, I don't think, anything to do with the original intent of the people who put the religion together.
I think American Judaism is a unique phenomenon. Like, you know, like like Tibetan Buddhism that came over from Tibet and made its way into America, it was changed. You know, Trungpa Rinpoche and the other Rinpoches, when they brought it over, and Theravadin Buddhism and also yoga, whenever one of these ancient traditions comes to America, it changes. So American Judaism is different, and American Judaism principally, you know, and it's Reform American Judaism is basically a spin-off of German, High German Reform of the 19th century, and it looks more like a Protestant service than an ancient Jewish service. The Orthodoxy is a holdover from the shtetl in the 19th century, and so you have between these two extremes, you know, Orthodox shtetl Judaism in Brooklyn and other enclaves of Orthodoxy, and High Reform, classic, highly, you know, formal services. You have between these two extremes, you know, no man's land, and where do you go? And so the idea is
so
to create...
Judaism has to be totally redefined, and there's no model for it, really. I mean, you talked about your teacher, who was an innovator. But how do we reform it so it's important? And why is Judaism important anyway? And why can't we just, love everyone without religion, is what I want to say.
Well, and that's the question. The question is, why can't we love everyone without religion is a good question. It's kind of like asking why can't we get tan without the sun? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. You can get tan without the sun. You can go to tanning beds or whatever it is, but the sun already is there, so why not use it? Religion too. You could imagine a world without religion. I mean, John Lennon did a good job of doing that, but it would be hard. You know, you'd spend a lot of energy trying to ignore and forget the fact that there was religion instead of imagining a world where no religion ever existed. It already exists. So why not utilize what is already present, you know, and maximize what is good in it so that you can make the most of it, you know?
Well, what is good in it? Tell me what is good, because in my years of growing up, I mean, I actually didn't find anything I could relate to. I know you meet a lot of New York Jews like that, and it's like, I would like to know what inspired you, what you found that was good in it.
So, you know, one of the things, such a great question, what is inspiring about it? And, you know, Alan, like me and like yourself, like a lot of us who have been on various journeys, we kind of come to truth through our life experience, and then when we hear teachings and wisdom teachings from the various traditions, we then resonate with it and say, oh, yeah, I that's true for my life too, you know. And so one of the things that was so true for me even before I came back to Judaism, I should say, was the importance of time and honoring time and sacred time, sacred season, sacred time, sacred moon, sacred sun, the rhythms of the year. And I think the Judaism as an ancient tradition that was grounded in the ancient cycles really connected me with the cycles of the sun, the cycles of the moon, and with very many beautiful holidays that brought very deep teachings around time.
Right.
One of the things that Judaism also in its Kabbalistic form, in the form of Jewish mysticism, has been very formative for me, many, many teachings around the beauty of words and the beauty of language, the chanting. The chanting in Judaism has been very trans-inducing and transformative for my life.
But, I mean, it doesn't... I mean, I understand what you're saying, and it applies to you, but, I mean, what you're saying is sort of true of a lot of religions, the honoring of the seasons. It's even a pagan phenomenon where, you know, you honor the earth, you honor the seasons, and there's chanting in all religions, but I think there is something, and maybe not, that distinguishes Judaism as a belief system or as a religion that's maybe different, its own flavor, not better or worse, but what gives it its own flavor is what I want to know.
I mean, the problem is that with almost every tradition, when you cut to the truth of every tradition, there's going to be similarities. more so than differences when it comes to the esoteric element. So there are so many things that are similar between Judaism and other traditions, more so than what people imagine. But I think that if I had to choose something that was unique about the Jewish experience, it would be the congruence, like the bringing together of so many pieces. You know, when I was very involved in Buddhism, I had friends, monks who said to me, you know, I love Buddhism, but I wish that we had Shabbat once a week. I wish we had the Holy Sabbath once a week. Or, you know, I talked to yogis, they would say, we love yoga. One of the things we love about Judaism is the focus on the integration of the body and the relationship to the earth. You know, so I know, you know, for me, those are things that are very unique. It's the confluence and the bringing together of so many various pieces under
but
one canopy.
Isn't there something about the Torah that makes it also unique, the written law that, in a way, separated Jews from other people?
Well, I think, you know, listen, I think that, again, to be completely honest, I think that there is a tradition of Holy Scripture in every one of the world's traditions. So as Holy Scripture, Torah is not unique, meaning, you know, there's holy, the sutras are holy, and the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas and the New Testament and the Quran and so on and so forth. All of those are sacred literature. The Torah is unique in that it is the ground of, you know, both Christianity and Islam are coming from the Torah. The Torah is unique in a period in history. It was incredibly unique because it was a revolution in the Near East. That's for sure. So the Torah is full of pieces. I mean, we could go on and on about what I love so much about Torah. I love Hebrew and I love the sound of Hebrew. The mystical wisdom of Torah, the literary beauty of the Torah, you know. It's hard to imagine a document more beautiful than the Torah, really.
I'll do a whole show with you in a couple of weeks just to really go deeper into these topics, but tell people a little bit about the services you do and where you're located and how people can find you and all that.
Well, we basically meet on Shabbat, Friday evening and Saturday morning. Friday night services are at 7 o'clock. Shabbat, Saturday morning services begin with yoga at 8:15, meditation at 9:30, and then, the chanting service begins at 10 o'clock. We meet on 105th Street and Amsterdam in a church called the West End Presbyterian Church, and we're called, the center is called Romemu, like the city, R-O-M-E, M-U, Moo. So Romemu.org. That's the website.
What does that mean, Romemu?
Romemu means let's elevate, let's be majestic, let's go high, let's transform and be the highest expression of who we are in the world. That's Romemu. So it's a call to others, it's a call to community, and it's a call to manifestation and evolution.
Wow. And the website?
Romemu.org.
Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate it. I'm sorry it was just so cut off, but we only have an hour for the show. But we'll
great.
Do another one, okay?
Look forward to it.
Thanks for being a guest on New Realities. This
thank
is
you, Alan.
Alan
I really
Steinfeld
appreciate it.
For New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net or check my website, newrealities.com. And this is a song I like to end with by Chris Williamson called The Song of the Soul.